Love.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control.
Hey.
A bad motherfucker, riding through the night. Yeah. A 50 motherfucker and I love to fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on red. No love for the other side, don't need to be friends. The gas, homie, you gotta keep on pissing. Out and out, cheer, check the dose, you need an ass.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. What's going on?
Good evening, Phil.
How you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Not bad. What else is going on? You get a chance to look at that stuff I was telling you about? It might keep you out of the courtroom?
Yeah, I mean, no, I was like, you were talking about, I was like, I don't even know my grandma.
Hello?
Hello.
Huh? Yeah. Did you hear my question?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Are you looking to read, or?
Okay.
Here we go. They're going to start playing with us already. Yeah. Well, anyway, what I was going to talk about was the police procedures for stopping your car.
Right.
According, you know, police traffic stops can be a harrowing for any officers because they never know what they will encounter. When they stop a car that is known to be stolen or driven by a wanted person, they know that the vehicle's occupants may offer resistance, so they can prepare by calling in for additional help. However, an everyday traffic stop, how drivers or passengers will respond to being stopped and must be prepared for anything. So his detection is, if it's determined that a driver will be pulled over, the first action should be calling a traffic stop to the dispatcher, which they always do. They have to verify where they're at for the stop. You agree?
Right.
Okay. Included in this call should be the reason for the stop, the location, the vehicle's license plate number, description of the car, and the number of occupants. Activate your vehicle's police emergency lights to alert the driver and try to have the car pull over where no curves or intersections. So you want to stop the vehicle 15 feet behind the car. This is actually what they're telling them what to do. Okay. This is the reasons why and what goes on when they do pull you over.
Right.
So their approach would be at night, they turn on their high beam headlights or a spotlight to obscure your approach on foot and light up the inside of the car you are stopping. Check the car's license plates to ensure that they're valid. Check the trunk to ensure that it's closed. If anyone gets out of the car, order the person back inside. Check for odd movements in the car or weapons as you approach. You'll never lean over and try and stick something, you know, like when I get pulled over, my hands just automatically go up. I don't want to get shot. Position yourself at the driver's window, but just behind the driver. Watch the driver's hands at all times and have the person give you a driver's license with the left hand if possible. If there are passengers, keep your eye on them. Try to keep your gun where no one in the sight of ego can reach out and grab it. Well, I haven't seen that happen yet. I've seen people get shot in their car because they didn't raise their hands like they were supposed to. But if you need to have the driver get out of the car, or that person to step away from it with their hands high, palms facing you, have the person kick the door shut, have the driver turn around slowly while you check for weapons, or have the person place both hands on the hood so you can search them. When you're finished, have the driver step away from the car and face the light to limit night vision. If you're satisfied that the driver is in the threat, isn't committing any violations other than one that prompted you to the traffic stop, have the person get back into the car. The back to your vehicle and write any ticket that's necessary. Return it to the driver's car and hand the ticket person or hand the ticket to the person along with his license. What do you think about that?
That's what they do.
Yeah. What do you think about
it? There's a lot that they should do better than a lot of them do jump the gun automatically, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just, you know, you could just buy a vehicle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can have a sticker or a piece of paper or not a plate on your vehicle. And they pull you over, you know, and automatically they're going to think something. You can show them the piece of paper, but they're still going to have that thought of, is this stolen? You know, no, sir, I just purchased the vehicle. I have to go get it registered. There's a lot of different fine lines in this, you know,
mm-hmm.
that can go either way and not necessarily good.
Right. You know, it's like, here, this is what this guy's going to tell you right now about pulling over for a stop, okay? This is a video. The links are on the blog. That's where I've been reading from. This guy tells you what.
An officer comes up behind you and turns the blue lights on. Normally, the officer has already thought about where he wants you to stop. So the first thing you can think of is that you need to stop as soon as possible, immediately. Look for the next street that pulls off or... If the road's wide enough, go ahead and pull off right to the side of the road. Use your directional. The officer is already...
Actually, here in California, you can pull over wherever you feel safest. You don't have to pull over right there. You can pull over wherever you feel safest.
Get planned down, because remember what I told you earlier. The officer's mindset is that he wants to go home safe. He's already pre-calculated, predetermined where he wants you to stop. And by activating his blue lights, or red lights, depending on which state you're in, he's already determined where he wants you to stop. So go ahead and just turn your directional on, pull off to the right-hand side of the road. If there is a side street, if you're on a main, busy city street and there is a little side street, chances are the officer would like you to pull off. Once you pull off, if you're pulling off onto a side street, make sure you pull far enough down so that the officer can get his vehicle in and that you're not affecting the intersection or other traffic. If you're pulling off to the side of the road, pull off as far as you can off to the side of the road. And let that officer get in behind you. If you feel that you need to pull into a parking lot, just pull alongside the side of the parking lot. Don't try to park into a parking space. If you pull into a parking space, you're going to affect other drivers because that officer has to position his vehicle a certain way in order to protect himself. Because remember what I told you earlier, the officer doesn't know you. He doesn't know if you've got a couple of guns in the car. He doesn't know if you're a wanted criminal. He's stopping you, and he's got to treat every traffic stop the same way. So when you pull over, say you pull into a parking space, that officer's got to pull around and position his vehicle, which may block other cars that are going by. That just creates a stressful situation for everybody involved. So please, pull to the right, use your directional. If there's not a good place to pull over right away, don't worry about it. Turn your directional on. Let that officer know that you've seen him and that you're not attempting to flee. Reduce your speed to where you're going below the speed limit. Turn your directional on and find the next logical place. But like I told you earlier, if the officer has activated his blue lights, chances are he already knows the place that he wants you to stop.
Basically, that's to inform you of what to do. But you're allowed to pull over where you feel safest, like you said. But don't park in a parking space or whatever, because that's what really pisses them off when you do that. So... This is tips on how to act when you're pulled over. There are a few important ways you should act when you're pulled over by the police. So he's going to explain to you what that is.
Out by the police. Once you've pulled over to the side of the road or the side of the parking lot or onto the side street, once you've done that, remain in your vehicle. Resist the urge to want to get out and explain yourself to the officer right away. Don't worry, he's going to come up and talk to you. Stay in the vehicle now, unless the officer tells you different. Now, we'll cover that. We'll cover more about what you do after the officer approaches in a second here, but let me tell you first. If the officer asks you to get out, he doesn't need a reason. According to the Supreme Court, he doesn't need a reason to ask you to step out of the vehicle. If he requests that you do, wait till he does. But if he does ask you to step out, go ahead and comply with the officer. Same goes for the passengers. If they're passengers in a vehicle, Supreme Court says that an officer can actually ask the passengers to step out, and he doesn't need a reason to do it. Most of the times, you will find that the officer is asking for a safety issue. Same thing, safety. If we're on a busy highway and the officer doesn't feel comfortable standing on the side of your car for traffic because he may get struck by a passing vehicle, he's going to go ahead and ask you to step out and stand off to the side of the road. But just remember, stay in your vehicle until directed otherwise by the officer. And if the officer does direct you otherwise, comply with what he asks you to do.
Got it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, what to do? Let's see. Actually, here, how to act when you're pulled over. It's taking a second to load up. So tell me what you think about all that.
Well, I mean, when I was pulled over, I just stayed in the car. I didn't go to get out of the car. When he approached the door, I had the window down so far. And he just asked in general, you know, is everything okay? Everything is fine. I see your driver's license. Here you go. Because the issue at hand was I had problems with my front end. Once he checked out my driver's license, and as I was just getting off at the next stop off the highway, and that was it. You know, I handed my license back, and that was it. But he did have the flashlight on in the car looking around, and, you know, but... You know, it's not like I had anything in there to hide.
Yeah. Because he's going to tell you. He's going to tell you.
Cox Super Savings Tip Number One.
He's going to tell you now how to. The Cox Bundle. What happens? Cox, you get these ads. What happens is he's going to tell you how to pull your car over.
Right.
Okay.
When an officer comes up behind you and turns the blue lights on, normally the officer has already thought about where he wants you to stop. So the first thing you can think of is that you need to stop as soon as possible, immediately. Look for the next street that pulls off, or if the road's wide enough, go ahead and pull.
Right. Like I said, you can pull over wherever you want. And then if he asks you why you pulled over there, all you got to do is tell him, because I didn't feel comfortable where you told me to pull over.
Right.
Okay. So... It's like what this one here is, what to do when you're pulled over. Yeah, the bad part is it's got to load up from another site.
Well, like I said, when I was pulled over, I was on the highway. So the shoulder was big enough for both vehicles to pull off, you know. It wasn't like he was in an unsafe spot when he approached my car. He had plenty of room. It's not like a vehicle was going to come and, you know, he wasn't standing on the white line. I was pulled off far enough where he had room.
He's like, we're going to go to this one here. It says what to do when you're pulled over.
What to do when you're being stopped by the police. Now, while the officer's approaching and when the officer's talking to you, remember one thing. Keep your hands where the officer can see. Remember what I said earlier. The officer's mindset is that he wants to go home safe at the end of his shift. All right, he probably has a family, people that he loves, people he wants to go home and see.
And you don't want to get shot.
He doesn't know you any more than you know him. The thing is that he wants to make sure that he's not going to be hurt. You keep your hands where, whether or not you have a weapon in the car, if you keep your hands where the officer can see him, he's going to feel a whole lot more comfortable talking to you. If you start reaching underneath the seat, behind the seat, behind your back. Typically, that's places where weapons are concealed, and the officer is going to be nervous, and the officer may draw his weapon. All right, so make sure you keep your hands where the officer can see them. Another little point I'm going to tell you is If you're dumb enough to be riding around with contraband laying on your seat, don't go and trying to hide it. All right. The officers are trained to see that while they're stopping you, while they're walking up to the car. It's going to make the officer nervous because you may be trying to hide a weapon. It's going to create a whole lot more problems for you. If you're not smart enough to be riding around without the stuff laying on your seat, chances are you've been caught. Just go ahead and be honest with the officer.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm here to talk to you today about what to
this one here,
do when you're being stopped by the police.
This one here is called Do Not Flirt When Pulled Over.
Another thing you do not want to do is take that politeness too far. All right. Officers are professionals. We're there to do a job. Don't flirt with the officer to think you're going to get out of a ticket. It's not going to work. Don't try to cry your way out of a ticket. All right. The officer's there to do his job. Okay. If you cry, don't expect that you're going to get out of that citation. You could be upset. Like I said, people react to stress in different ways. The chances are, if you're faking the crying, you're fake the flirting, the officer's going to see through it, and it's not going to help you at all. Another big thing is, don't try to bribe your way out of a citation or out of an arrest. Okay? I guarantee you, you do not have enough to offer me to cost me my career, the livelihood of my family, my home, my security. You don't have enough to offer me. Okay, so don't offer a bribe. Be polite. Be professional with the officer. He's going to be professional with you.
True.
True. Well, like sure. I said, I was. And, you know, since I had issues with my front end, I didn't have a problem to show him my estimate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, hey, I just got off from work. What am I supposed to do? You know, I couldn't get my car until the following morning, so I had no choice. You got to drive it.
Yeah. And you're lucky he didn't give you a ticket for unsafe vehicle.
Well, it's not that it was unsafe. The front end, you know, wasn't going to fall apart, you know. It just needed a front end alignment. But, you know, here when it gets windy, yeah, it gets windy. And the wind just had caught, you know, me the way, you know, it just brought me over the white line a little bit. And he just wanted to make sure I was okay. Yeah, I'm fine. Just got off from work. Went my way home.
The other thing you don't want to do is why are you going to argue with them? They're going to do what
I'm
they're
not.
Going to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
I
they're
didn't
going to
argue.
Do it. Yeah, no, I'm not saying you argued. I'm saying
right.
Some argue. Well, I didn't do that. Whatever. If they pulled you over, unless they're in a real good mood, which they never are, you're not going to get out of the ticket, period.
Right.
This is going to tell you why not to argue with them.
Being stopped by the police. Once the officer stops you, you've gotten your driver's license, registration, proof of insurance. You've established whether there's a weapon in the car or not. You're still being polite. He's advised you of why he's stopping you. Don't argue. The roadside is not the place to argue your case. Remember, in the United States, in our court system, for all of its flaws, one of the positive aspects of it is that you are...
You notice there what he said? All of its flaws?
Right.
Okay.
It's until proven guilty. Okay. You will have your day in court if you wish to plead your case as far as why you were speeding or whatever the deal is. You'll have your opportunity to plead your case in court. If you think that you are able to outwit the officer, argue with the officer, explain why in satisfaction with the officer why you shouldn't be getting cited or why you weren't doing what he just saw you do, you're not going to win that argument on the side of the road. I promise you that officer, one way or another, is going to win that argument on the side of the road. It's not a battle you need to pick on the side of the road. Something else to think about is that if you are polite, courteous, and the officer does cite you, in case he doesn't give you a warning, he does cite you. Well, that's all stuff that the officer remembers. Okay, he's going to document every stop in his notes. If you don't give the officer a hard time, you admit, hey, you know what, I probably screwed up. I don't think I did it, but you know what, if you're saying I did it, I did it. Yes, sir, no, sir, be polite. The officer's going to document that in his notes, and when it comes time for court, if you do have your day in court, the officer's going to be able to say that to the district attorney and to the judge. He's going to let them know that you were a very cooperative person. The contrary is true, too. If you give that officer a hard time, A, the chance of getting a warning is pretty much out the window. Okay. B, you don't think that officer is going to document very carefully everything that you said, everything that you've done, every name that you called him, every time you told him that you pay his salary? He's going to probably document that. When it comes time for court, you think when the attorney comes up to him and asks him, you know, do you mind if we plead him down to a lesser charge, do you think the officer's really going to want to work with you? Probably not. If you've done something, remember, don't argue on the side of the road. Don't give the officer a hard time. You could, like I mentioned earlier, you could be looking at additional charges, especially if you're cussing at him, giving him a hard time, not following his instructions. And the officer's going to document that. When you get to court, being polite and positive will help you out. Being negative, giving the officer a hard time, will probably hurt you when you come to court. Another thing to keep in mind, most officers, most patrol cars are equipped with microphones and video cameras. You give the officer a hard time, chances are very high that that is all caught on tape. So when you turn around and go to court, especially if it's really egregious, and that goes to court, you say, I wasn't doing that, or I didn't do that, and the officer pulls out the tape and says, look what he called me, look what he did, it's probably going to hurt you. So remember, be polite, don't argue. The side of the road is not the time to argue. Get yourself an attorney, go to court, and have your day in court. It's not, the burden is on the officer in order to prove that you did what he's saying you did.
Like Bill and I tell you, the first 30 to 45 seconds tell you how it's going to go.
Yeah. Well, it's a given, you know. I was pulled over before for having a loud muffler system that was just put on the vehicle. I had to show them the receipt. I said, look, I just left the place. What do you mean I'm loud? You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was polite, but it was just, I said, that car just passed. It was louder than my car. And you just pulled me over? You know, but, you know, he let me go. I had a warning. But, you know, it's crazy. I know.
Yeah. Because they do whatever they want.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, I was still polite and courteous. You know, I was annoyed, but I didn't show it, you know.
Because basically, you know, you guys, you have rights during a traffic stop. And speeding is among the most common. So getting stopped and questioned by police is a reality that nearly all drivers face at some point in their traveling life. Whether the outcome is a citation, a verbal warning, or a criminal charge, most motorists have only a hazy understanding at best of their constitutional rights.
Right.
Knowing when those rights can make a big difference in how the actual stop turns out, which is what I tell you. If you don't know what the hell you're talking about, shut up. Acknowledging the stop by slowing down and pulling over to the nearest safe area is the driver's first response. For stops that occur at night, fearing the possibility of police impersonators are within their legal rights to proceed to a more visible public place, such as a gas station, for example. So not speaking to the officer is basic legal rights. Refusing to answer questions beyond providing evidence, license, and registration information ranks among your most basic legal rights as outlined by the U.S. Constitution, Fifth Amendment. As long as the driver's attitude isn't as bad as combativeness, there is no immediate problem for invoking this right against self-incrimination. This is the $20 question here. Searching a vehicle is limited under the plain view doctrine, which requires officers to obtain warrants for looking at the interior, such as the glove compartment or any area that's not visible at a glance. Unless the driver consents, he has no probable cause to search the vehicle. If they want to search your body, you can cut the body search. He's only allowed to pat you down the outer layers of your clothing and check the driver and passenger for possible weapons. If necessary, he may reach into a pocket to pull out the weapon. Otherwise, going through someone's pockets is only permissible at the time of arrest. That's correct.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if you don't know, you're gonna get screwed.
Right.
But the one that really sent me over the edge today was when the FBI announced that all Americans are now a threat to America.
Oh, I know. Okay, what is the threat pertaining to? Because people are finally, the ones that are paying attention to what's taking place, they're angry, they're upset. They have, you know, look at the economy, the jobs, the housing market, taxes. I mean, yeah, it gets Americans angry, but it doesn't mean they're going to sit there and, you know, be the vigilantes that they're wanting it to make out to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, because the FBI issued a statement exposing the threat of hundreds of thousands of sovereign citizens who can turn violent at the drop of a hat during encounters with the police.
Right.
So they've had three specific cases.
Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean everybody fits that profile.
No.
And you know what? They also have to take into consideration there are people that have mental issues. You know, are they on their medication? You know, to control bipolar, whatever the case may be. That could set people off. And that's not being combative. That's just being what they have to deal with.
Right.
You know, so they're not looking at all the options. They just want to sit there, or circumstances, they're just saying they're pointing it to direct.
Yeah, they see
the
trend of an increase of arrest of believers in individual sovereignty from 10 to 18 per year, mostly for nonviolent crimes. So the FBI declared law enforcement to be inundated with threats. In other words, treat everybody like they're threatening you.
Right. And there's no reason to be like that.
No, because this is the most exaggerated and offensive example of specious fear-mongering to come out of an administration which is promoting initial fear of general army groups of citizens for 3 years now.
Right.
So the FBI is taking aim at a huge body of citizens who are increasingly angry over government abuse of power and irresponsibility in attempting to turn them into a movement of dangerous potential terrorists. So this goes along with that NDAA.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. Those dangerous extremists hold such horrific views as an outrage at tax collection, defying environmental regulations, and believing the United States went bankrupt by going off the gold standard. So anybody that thinks that way, you're now a sovereign citizen. And defining them as members of a movement, although they provide no evidence of organized or coordinated activity beyond just being angry with the government, is shared by half the nation's population. So I would say that the concerns over the threat were excessive, but that's giving the FBI too much credit.
True. You know, like I said, we have a right to be angry. We have a right to be upset. Because
to me, that's ridiculous is more an appropriate description.
Right. I mean, I have been classified, and this is no joke, you know, just because I'm neighbors with people that drink, you know, there was a circumstance that took place, and, you know, I just walked over in general, hey, you know, is everything okay? And, oh, well, you should be over there with the rest of the drunks. Wait a minute, I don't drink. But here I'm classified to be a part of that. Why?
Yeah.
Because I'm a neighbor? Are you kidding me?
No,
you know, and that's not fair. You're classifying me as a drunk? I haven't.
Well, you can go to association.
Exactly. For what?
Yeah.
And that's what annoys me. Guilt by association? Come on. You know, people are human beings. I don't care what walk of life you come from. We're all human beings. We all put our pants on the same way, put our shoes on, it's all the same. What is different?
Yeah.
You may have a record. I don't have a record. This one could be, you know, excessively have a violent history past. But guess what? There's a human being in each of us.
Well, you know, statistically, in the 3 years they're talking about, they've had an increase from 10 to 18. So they've had 8 more cases per year, mostly of nonviolent crimes associated with anti-government activists. Isn't a crime wave. It's not even large enough. To me, it's not even large enough to qualify as a valid quantifiable trend.
And for somebody to put this out the way that they did is ridiculous.
Yeah, because given 100...
I could see if it was by millions or thousands.
Yeah, I mean, given 100,000 of crimes committed yearly, it's far below the margin of error for crime statistics.
Exactly.
You know,
and if somebody's a repeat offender on a low crime scale, okay, well, they may have attitude issues towards, you know, officers, but maybe there's a reason for it. Okay,
exactly.
In regards to maybe how they were treated the last time they were stopped.
You know,
question.
Yeah, but they're claiming now that they're inundated right now with the request for training from state and local law enforcement on sovereign-related matters. This supposedly demand for a response to a non-existent threat would probably not be there at all had the FBI not promoting the idea that average citizens are potential domestic terrorists for years. That's only been since 9/11 that all this shit came out. Because they're creating boogeymen just to satisfy their own actions and distract the government from increasing callous disregard for our rights as citizens.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, because the concerns they're talking about, which the FBI is using to identify potentially dangerous citizens, are not the hallmarks of dangerous extremism. I take on my local town. I do this, I do that, and all of a sudden I'm a terrorist.
You're classified. Yeah. You're marked.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm classified.
Each one of us are marked for some reason. Okay, whether it be who we associate with, who we live next door to. If you have a different opinion than what they feel that you should have a different opinion in,
you would call those reasonable concerns over the current state of our government.
Exactly.
Millions of fairly ordinary citizens have legitimate reasons to be dissatisfied with the government.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, come on.
The founding fathers had the same kind of extreme views.
Right, but who goes by that anymore? That's so old school, it's not even funny.
Yeah, if you read Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, George Washington, Samuel Adams, John Adams, they all say the same thing. Thomas Jefferson said, change the hands of government so we know who the criminals are or some shit. I forget. I have to remember how it goes.
Well, here, Kitty Cat raises a good thing here. Okay, they have never really done anything wrong to her, per se, but she has seen them treat people very badly and wrongly, which makes her feel the way that she does about circumstances. And I can agree with that. I've never wrongfully been, crucified. But I've been classified once as being a drunk, and I'm not. So I can understand where she's coming from, okay? And I have seen people, and it's like, what is going on here? Are you kidding me?
Well, there's one unifying characteristic in all of these extremists, as they're called, is they are not happy with the government, which is spending beyond its means, taxing beyond our ability to pay, which encroaches the more and more on our constitutionally guaranteed rights every day.
Right.
In their statement, the FBI is not actually identifying a real threat to the public safety or to citizens. They're putting us on notice that the public expression of justifiable anger at the government can be labeled a dangerous criminal, even a terrorist.
I know. I just find it redundant.
That tactic to me is purely and simply to intimidate and silence the public. They're sending the message that protest is a crime and speaking out against government will not be tolerated. So look what they're doing to all the Occupy people. Look what they did in Oakland a couple of weeks ago. Shot all those people.
Now that was ridiculous. I talk to people all over. The unfortunate thing is there's so many people in different places that, you have freedom. No, it's getting to where we talked last. It's all being like we're being pushed into a bathroom. Here comes the prison. Wake up, Things are getting taken away.
Yeah, let me see who this is here. Hey, we got somebody calling on Skype. Hello. We got somebody calling on Skype. Okay, I think they're probably just going to listen then. But, no, it's like the ominous in the wake of efforts to the National Defense Appropriation Act, the Patriot Act, and the pending enemy expatriate act to empower the government to take away the most fundamental rights of the citizens as they did under Hoover.
Right.
So FBI's categorizing mixed people and making lists. If you don't watch your stuff, they'll put you in a database and take away your rights. So I'm already in the database.
Okay, well, and that's what I'm going back to. Who's your neighbor? Who do you talk to? And you're automatically there. For what?
Right.
What
right.
have you done wrong as a person to sit there and be put in that database?
Right.
Why? Because you
exactly.
may talk to somebody so many times a year, or you may see somebody so many times a year that maybe they don't like, but they're your friend. Hello?
Right.
So you are put in that database.
Exactly. Like, here, I got one from, this one's from a Michigan State Trooper. Check this out. It's kind of funny. It's Minnesota State Trooper. He made a traffic stop on an elderly lady the other day for speeding on Minnesota State Highway 210 at mile marker 197, just east of McGregor, Minnesota. He asked her for a driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. The lady took out the required information and handed it to her. In the cart, he was somewhat surprised due to her advanced age to see a concealed carry permit. He looked at her and asked if she had any weapons in her possession at this time. She responded that indeed she had a .45 automatic in her glove box. Something body language or the way she said it made me ask her again, do you have any other firearms? She did admit to having a 9mm Glock in the center console. Now, I had to ask one more time if that was all. She responded once again that she did have one more .38 special in her purse. I didn't ask her what she was afraid of. She looked him right in the eye and said, not a fucking thing. Okay, you can laugh.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I know.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, like I said, this is it's an unforeseen thing. It's just going to get worse as time goes. You know,
well, you know,
first, everybody was worried about terrorism, okay? Terrorism taking place from, you know, anywhere in the Middle East to the states. Now it's the states attacking people in the states. So where does the fine line come in? There is none anymore. It's not there. It doesn't exist.
No.
We're all going to be on a list for something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just like the other one, you know, the other day after the Homeland Security, Art says, which is I was going to go to that, but he beat me to it. But after the Homeland Security memo a few years ago on all the vets, constitutionalists, and rights activists are a threat to security. You know, like we were talking about last week with the vets made that list.
And why?
Go ahead.
They're vets.
Do you remember that? Tell everybody about that.
Oh, yeah. How they want to classify the MC or the MC vets as one percenters. I'm still trying to figure that one out. That still has me stumped.
Yeah, they well had me stumped too. And I read it twice.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, I still can't figure it out. And it's not like I don't know how to read between the lines, but I cannot, for the love of God, figure out why they would classify them as 1%.
Yeah. Well, you know, the goal, going back to that FBI thing, and basically the government was to intimidate the critics of the government. They also are showing us we so desperately need to take our government back for these threats of abuse and power to in a full-fledged tyranny.
Well, but unfortunately, it's coming. It's already here.
Exactly.
And, you know, nobody is paying attention as Bill would say, wake up. Wake up.
Yeah, they're all asleep at the wheel.
This is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people that do not care. They don't want to know. And there's ones that are blindly, unfortunately, not informed or being informed or paying attention to have the information.
Right. Let's see. Hold on. Who this is? Hello, 978. Is that you, Pete?
Public enemy number one.
What's up, man?
Oh, you know, all kinds of stuff in this state.
Go
talked
for
about
it.
The FBI there. You just mentioned in the FBI about a week ago. My mother called me and she said, turn the news on. She'll see what the FBI did to this poor lady and her baby in Fitchburg, which is a few towns over from where I live. It's like a ghetto area. They were looking for this. They did this big drug sweep in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, and they were looking for this guy. They call him the Joker. He's a drug dealer, big drug dealer. He was hiding out in this building. He actually lived in the building. That's where his residence was. And he was hiding in his apartment. And the feds came, man, like 20 of them, with a chainsaw. I had to catch my breath because I just ran up the hill. They came in with a chainsaw, and there was a lady, a young girl, on the other side of the door. Oh, she was in her apartment resting with her baby and her puppy. And the feds started to cut through her door. And they were kicking the, they didn't even identify themselves as police officers, as federal agents, nothing.
Yeah,
and
isn't that where they found out they went to the wrong house?
Yeah, so they kicked the door in and they forced her on the ground with her kid, and the puppy wet itself, and the feds said to her, pick that dog up or we're gonna shoot it, basically, you know. So she had to put her arm through urine, grab the dog, help him. And she says, please, you get the wrong apartment. I don't know the guy. I don't know who he is. I've never heard his name. And they didn't believe her because I'm guessing because she was Spanish and he was Spanish, and she's probably figuring out, she's like, get him hidden out in the back bedroom somewhere, which is, you know, that's how the feds operate, you know. They discriminate, stereotype, and, you know, single people out, as we know, as bikers, we know that they do that. And they do it to minorities as well. So they figured she knew the guy. He was hiding in the back bedroom. But it came down to they had the wrong apartment. And he was actually in his own apartment, and that's where they found him. And, you know, I hope she gets a slew of lawyers and sues her ass, because it's a good example of what they shouldn't be doing, you know. They ordered her to the ground by gunpoint. She had to grab a puppy. I feel bad for the dog. The dog pissed itself. And the little kid, and she was terrified, you know, and it's just my mother. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my God, you know, wrong house. So, you know, she'll make out, and I'm glad. I'm on her side. I hope she sues their ass. And they just basically have given her, I was reading the news the other day, and they basically have just given her, the director of the FBI gave her an apology letter or something. And if she's smart, she'll get a lawyer, a good lawyer, or a few different ones, and sue their ass. You know, because that's just dead wrong, man. They never even identified themselves as federal officers or anything. Police officers, they chainsawed the door down. And there was a picture of it in the newspaper. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a good example of the bullshit that they pull. You know, they do it to bikers all the time. And, you know, we have what we call the federal police here, because I live at the town I live in. It's a military town. And, you know, they got, as I mentioned a few weeks ago on the show, they grabbed us for nothing. It was me, my brother, and Gino. You know, and they all surround us with guns and everything. And for what? Well, like, you know, I asked the local cop. I said, what? We didn't do anything. What did we do? Because we get long hair and tattoos and leather jackets on, and we're getting pulled over? And that's all it comes down to. Yeah, you know, it's either that or if you're black or brown, you know. And this state is Massachusetts getting rough. Well, I'll tell you.
Well, here, I'll tell you one. This guy, I don't know if you guys heard about the story, but it came out, it wasn't the help he wanted, but what happened was this Army Reservist, he called the police to get help, you know. So they surrounded his house and arrested him, vandalizing and searching his place without a warrant, seizing his dog and killing his tropical fish. This guy's name was Matthew Corrigan. He lives alone with his dog. So he sued the District of Columbia Federal Court. because he had a massive police presence after his plea for help. He denied officers permission to enter his house, but they entered and trashed it anyway, saying, "We don't have time to play constitutional bullshit." Because he didn't know if it was the cops or not who it was. So he telephoned what he believed the military's emotional support hotline because he was depressed and had not slept for several days. That's how it started. The number Corrigan called is, in fact, the National Suicide Hotline. When he stated he was a veteran and he asked if he had firearms, to which he said yes, he said nothing about being suicidal or using a firearm or threatening anyone. After a short conversation, he hung up, turned off the phone, took prescribed sleeping medication, and went to bed. At 4 a.m., the morning of February 3rd, he awoke because he heard his name being called over a bullhorn. There were floodlights inside the front back doors and an estimated 8 police officers in the back and 20 in the front yard. He turned on his phone and found that Officer Fisher of the 5th District was calling him, asking him to come out, which he did at 4:50, locking the door behind him. He was handcuffed and put in the back of a SWAT truck. When Officer John Doe, upon information and belief, Officer John Doe is Lieutenant Robert Glover. He asked Corrigan for the keys to the apartment. He informed the officers, "No way I'm giving you a consent to enter my place. I don't have time to play this constitutional bullshit," and ordered him to give him the keys. So when he didn't give him the keys again, he ordered the emergency response team to enter the apartment. He says police took him to the VA hospital, broke his front door, entered his apartment without a warrant, where they confiscated his guns, vandalized his place, and took his dog to an animal shelter. Although all the officers had no information there were explosives in Corrigan's home and the home had been secured, the explosive ordnance team entered Corrigan's home without a warrant and searched for explosives. They opened the closed containers and used x-ray equipment to search closed containers. After the initial warrantless search, the EO team brought in a dog for search for firearms. During the search of Corrigan's home, they seized 3 firearms and numerous rounds of ammunition for those firearms and others. 3 firearms were a rifle, which was unloaded and trigger-locked in a locked hard side container under his bed, a handgun, which is in a hard case in a drawer in a closet, and another handgun, which is in a zip bag on the shelf at the bottom of a clothes rack. Pillows and blankets were on top of it next to the bag. The lock cases were taken, but the broken latches were left on the floor. The ammunition was stored in a sealed plastic crate, and the rest of the boxes in the original packing in a milk crate, which is stored under a sleeping bag in the utility closet. They broke his eyeglasses and thrown in a corner. He spent 3 days at the VA hospital because having weapons pointed at him upon leaving his apartment triggered his post-traumatic stress, hypervigilance, and caused a regular heartbeat. He was released and determined not to be a suicidal risk. Police then arrested him and put him in jail where he remained for 2 weeks. When he returned to the apartment 16 days after being seized, he found they had left the front door unlocked, unsecured, left his electric stove on, had cut open every zip bag, had dumped every box and drawer, had broken lock boxes from under the bed and closet, emptied shelves into piles in each room, all his tropical fish in his 150-gallon aquarium were dead. He's seeking more than $500 in damages for his constitutional violations. What do you think about that?
Great story, man.
Here we go, you know. Yeah, where we've been at.
I'll tell you, one of the greatest stories I ever heard with them bastards is when they raided the HA clubhouse and they killed the pit bulls. And the HA turned around and they sued, and they won, shot out a large amount of money. That was several years back. And for no reason, the dogs weren't even going after them or anything, and then they raided the clubhouse and they shot their pit bulls. They shot their dogs, and they turned around and they sued them for, like, I'd have to look it up. It was a large amount of money, and they won.
Yeah.
You know, so the cops had no right to do that, you know, the feds. But now I always worry about that with my dogs, and my house has been, you know, I've had the police come here and, you know, in my other house as well with, you know, warrants and coming, you know, not recently, but in the past. Especially in my other house where I had 4 dogs and they were all Rottweilers, and they come to the house and want to search the house looking for somebody or looking for something. I tell them up front, "I don't have anything in the house," and they're like, "Go ahead." First thing they say is, "Hey, I'll shoot those dogs if they come near me." And it's like, they're not even bothering you. I'll put them in the bedroom, you know.
Yeah.
That bothers me, you know, when there's an animal or a child involved. That really bothers me, man. You know,
yeah.
They killed the guy's fish, you were saying, or something on top of it.
They did what?
They killed the guy's tropical fish, you were saying?
Yeah. They broke the aquarium.
And people think that's silly. They'd say, "Oh, that's nothing." You know what? No, you know what? Hey, I had a 55-gallon fish tank that was worth, with the fish, about $5,000. And those were my fish. And if somebody could, they cut any, I don't care who it was, come in there and put a round through my fish tank, I'd be suing their ass. What are the fish going to do, attack the police?
Yeah.
Attack,
they're going to swim.
Put a sign on your door, warning, attack fish, protected by attack fish.
Yeah, well, it's just like Art says, at what point of being violated can a person protect himself from the police?
Where do you go? And I have a prime example here. In my local paper, there was an article that just, it was different. The state audio recording law is under scrutiny here because there is a woman that went to file sexual harassment charges against one of, against the Chicago police officer, okay? Back in 2010, they actually jailed her, and she's looking at 15 years for recording the conversation.
Right.
Okay.
That happened to another guy in Boston.
Right. But now they're looking at, well, in Illinois, they're documenting life in the era of smartphones and YouTube that can result in felony charges. The little-known law could draw more attention. That's coming here in May, which we had talked about on your show before in regards to NATO and the G8 summits.
Right.
That's going to be here in May. Because, you know, I'm sorry, you know what's going to be taking place in regards to protesting. So people get out their phones and pow, here we go. They're recording.
Yeah.
They're taking video. And, you know, unfortunately, they're looking at how to revise the law. Because in some states, other than here, you can get away with doing that and not get in trouble for it.
You're not getting away with anything. It's your right.
Well,
right.
I understand that. But in some states, they're not pushing that in regards to they're looking at it wrongfully on recording. Okay?
Yeah.
But here, if all parties are not consent to it, well, then here comes the issue. And here comes the federal.
Yeah, I had that conversation on the side of the road, and I informed him that he's in uniform in a marked patrol car on a public street. He's not taking a piss. He's not going into his house, and he's covering.
Right.
So, season. I'm gonna play one song and then I'll be right back.
Okay.
Just run.
thank you for, I had to take a break there for a minute and get something to drink. But, what else, Nora?
Well, like I said, I'm in awe in regards to how Americans are being targeted, in regards to how the vet MCs are being looked at as 1%. What have they done? It's just another way to clamp down on everybody in regards to, we might as well just say we live in Russia before they, you know,
mm-hmm.
became independent from being communist.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just like right now, I got an MRF release, and just the way things are treated now, you know, over the last few years, people have heard me talk about these motorcycle-only checkpoints. And the Department of, they reported on Wednesday the 1st that the U.S. House Committee targets federal funding of motorcycle-only roadside checkpoints. This came from the Vice President of Government Relations and Public Affairs. But on February 1st, the United States House of Representatives Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, they rolled out the latest version of the highway bill for its long-term funding bill for road construction and highway programs. But this version of the bill takes aim at a controversial practice of the Department of Transportation, which funded motorcycle-only roadside checkpoints with taxpayer dollars. They've drawn much criticism from the motorcycle community at large, so much so that longtime motorcycle champion Representative Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin introduced legislation to end the program by prohibiting any future federal funding of any motorcycle-only roadside checkpoints. The bill is H.R. 904. The Mammoth Highway Bill includes the same language as contained in H.R. 904. Sensenbrenner had this to say: we need to focus on proven methods of motorcycle safety, including crash prevention, rider education, and training and proper licensing. Motorcycle-only checkpoints are an intrusive government overreach that place an undue burden on riders while doing little to improve safety. He added, it's encouraging to see all the transportation reauthorization bill will encourage more efficient use of taxpayer dollars and smart motorcycle safety policy. So, and there's another guy in Wisconsin, his name is Tom Petrie. He's a staunch defender of the motorcyclists, had this to comment on the issue. Motorcycles riders are right to be outraged at being singled out for safety inspections, Petrie said. Nobody is suggesting flagging cars now for unscheduled inspections, and there's no good reason why motorcycles should be treated differently. It's unnecessarily intrusive and not a smart way to use limited police resources. So with swift passage, this bill is not likely, but it's certainly it's an encouraging step. So I'll keep you updated on that one.
Yeah, please do. I know people that are in you know, military MCs. It just shocks me.
Yeah. Well, they did it here. They tried to do it here, actually. And I got it stopped the day before. And that's when they tried to turn the heat up on me after that, where I couldn't go anywhere, pulled over. Because they lost, they got to a grant for $237,000 and some change to do that. Motorcycle only in DUI checkpoints. So they set up one for motorcycles only, and then they tried to set up another one after the DUI checkpoint, but I got the first one stopped and they couldn't do the second one. So when the motorcycles went through the DUI checkpoint, they gave them the same shit that they gave the DUI drivers.
Right.
Or going through the checkpoint. Is that ridiculous? Yeah, I went through one night and they told me, well, we know you were at the bar for 2.5 hours. Really? I don't drink.
Well, neither do I. So, you know, okay, what's the point? You can't sit in a bar.
I wasn't in the bar.
But I'm just saying, if you were, what is the point?
Yeah, well, they said I was.
Right.
I wasn't. I had to stop the interview and ask for the sergeant, who knows I don't drink and who knows I don't go inside the bar.
Well, okay, if they knew it was you, hypothetical, mm-hmm. okay, where did you say your double was at? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know. I mean, we all have a twin somewhere, but he's not anywhere around here.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they claim, but, you know, okay, again, where was he? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brother used to get in a lot of trouble when he was alive. And the saddest thing is, I mean, there were sometimes, you know, officers would sit there, do you know anything? No? How would I know? I'm not him.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do I know?
You know, it's just like the other day. I don't know if anybody saw that a commercial that Clint Eastwood did during the Super Bowl. Did you happen to see that?
I don't know. Was that during halftime?
Yeah, it was right after Madonna.
Okay, then, no, I didn't see it.
Where he says that we should be I'm going to load it up here. I'll just play it.
Well, I had it taped. I just didn't go back to see the commercials because I had spoken, you know, on the phone with someone and was having a piece of cake at the time.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good. And what I'll do, I'll play it, and then we'll talk about it afterwards.
Okay.
Both teams are in the locker room discussing what they can do to win this game in the second half. It's halftime in America, too. People are out of work and they're hurting. They're all wondering what they're going to do to make a comeback. And we're all scared because this isn't a game. The people of Detroit know a little something about this. They almost lost everything. But we all pull together. Now Motor City is fighting again. I've seen a lot of tough eras, a lot of downturns in my life, and times when we didn't understand each other. It seems that we've lost our heart at times. The fog of division, discord, and blame made it hard to see what lies ahead. But after those trials, we all rallied around what was right and acted as one. What we do. We find a way through tough times. If we can't find a way, then we'll make one. All that matters now is what's ahead. How do we come from behind? How do we come together? And how do we win? Detroit's showing us it can be done. And what's true about them is true about all of us. This country can't be knocked out in one punch. We get right back up again, and when we do, the world's going to hear the roar of our engines. Yeah, it's halftime, America, and our second half's about to begin.
So, basically, if we use that same philosophy in the motorcycle community, it all came together. We'd be a force to be reckoned with.
Very true.
You know, put all the politics aside, all the bullshit, and come together. We really be a force to be reckoned with.
Oh, yeah. And in a good way.
Exactly. No, I don't mean bad way. I mean a good way.
No, I didn't mean it. That you stated it that way. You know, like I said, that would be history right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it would. I mean, I don't know, you know.
There's so
anybody
much
want?
People just want to tear everything down, and it's ridiculous. There is. It just makes me nuts.
Yeah, well, if anybody wants to call in, the number's 347-826-7753. And anything we've talked about you want to chime in on or talk about or anything that you want to let people know about, go ahead and call in, and I'll give you the mic. But, yeah, I mean, what do we do, you know? Where do we go?
Yeah, kitty cat said better. United we stand, divided we fall.
Exactly.
They used to say that in the 70s on commercials, on the Coca-Cola commercials. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah, I do.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
History repeats.
Yeah.
But then it gets worse.
Exactly. Hey, Pete.
Sorry about that. My cell phone died. I got a call from. I had to call from my house.
Okay. So
we have the number now. No, just kidding.
Oh, you got it a long time ago.
I know.
So, what do you think, man? Where do we go from here?
As far as what fighting?
Yeah.
Well, retreat is not an option in this war, or in any war. So
yeah.
That's all I have to say about that.
But see, this is how the government wants everybody to look at it. It's a war. It's not a war. It's just who's going to stand together to see everything for what it is. But it's not. You know, when's the last time people actually, you know, took the time to stand together instead of standing down?
When I jump on a motorcycle, I have, you know, the state police within 3 minutes of me leaving my house and the local police and canines and everything else surrounding me and throwing me to the ground and thinking that I'm public enemy number one, then that's a war for me because it's not right. It's been going on for too long. Most of us are innocent. They label people with long hair and tattoos. I don't even belong to a club. And if I did, I can't even imagine the harassment I'd get because I get enough now. I mean, Christ, I was pulled over on foot walking my dogs by the state police on foot, you know. And to me, it's a war. And, you know, I'll go to my grave on a motorcycle, you know, and I will never back down from that type of harassment or bullshit or discrimination or anything from the police, the government, or anybody in general. Somebody,
yeah, I had.
We got to stick together, you know, and we got to do radio shows and TV shows, and that's what we do.
Right.
We're family. My mother always said, we're few but many.
Yeah.
You know? They're trying to pass a law in Massachusetts that says you can only ride your bike 6 months out of the year.
Oh, yeah? What about that?
You got to put your bike away for the other 6 months, for the wintertime. And we don't even get 6 months of winter here.
No, I mean, because we haven't had much of a winter here. I mean, guys have been out riding, you know.
I was at a meeting earlier tonight, and it was a guy on his bike, and it was a beautiful thing to see somebody pull up. And it was only like probably 47 degrees out, but the guy pulled up and he had like a snow. He was an older guy. He had a Sportster and just a beautiful thing to see, you know, in cold weather. And I mean, I ride in the cold too, but I'm older now, so it kind of gets into my bones. But it was. I heard the bike pull up and I said, yeah, right on, you know, shit. That's the way.
Yeah.
Old man. It's like, what's your friend there? Merlin, you know. Everybody needs to have his attitude. He don't care riding anything, you know. He's an old man.
No,
he doesn't ride in any weather. He doesn't care. He goes everywhere.
Yeah.
That guy's amazing.
Have you met him yet? Did he get back there?
No. No. Jesus Christ. I haven't talked to him in a long time.
Yeah, I think he came back for a funeral, and then he was going to head that way.
Yeah, he's going to call me.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the type of guy to say he's going to do something, not do it, you know.
Well, I'm kind of the same way myself.
Jesus, I mean, he goes, you know, Phil, he goes everywhere, bro. I can't believe he calls in, and he used to call in a lot. You know, where are you now? I'm California. Where are you now? I'm in Chicago. Well, you know, I'm in Boston. Well, you know, I'm in Florida. I'm down the Keys. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
And he must have a lot of miles on that bike, boy.
Yeah, well, he killed the last one in the just at the beginning or middle of the year when he came back from the East Coast, he got another one.
Really? I believe it.
Yeah. You know, it's like California. We can ride our bike every day, man. You know.
Well, you know, we don't need to rub that in, okay, because some of us are not on your coast, and that's not my story.
Yeah, but they, see, we get one thing, they get one thing that we don't want more, and that's earthquakes.
Very true. Yeah, you know,
you
know,
so
we
can
may
have
get tornadoes. We may get tornadoes or torrential rains or, you know, massive snowstorms at times, but you know what? I wouldn't trade the tough skin that we have become to get adapted to being in our element to 24/7 nice weather. I'm sorry. I would be lost without snow. I mean, I have to see it. I have to physically see it, make my snowballs in the winter, throw them in the freezer for, you know, and then bring them out in the summertime when it's 98 to 114 degrees out. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I've never done that. That's a good idea, actually.
You know, it's actually great because if you're out working on something and it's 114 degrees out, you can just grab out one of them snowballs, put it on your pressure points on your neck, you know, and stuff, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is heaven. But it works. People think the oddest thing. I don't care. I got a bag of snowballs in the freezer.
Yeah, well, I just want to tell you guys, Art chimed in from Poway. He said, here today was almost worthy of mentioning in the Bible, torrential rain and wind. The rain in the mountains and no sunshine at all. It was terrible. And me on the coast, it was just windy all day till about 4 o'clock when it started raining.
Wow.
And Art says, lucky we had no flooding.
And where is he from?
Poway, California. He's up by the, he's up in the, East County.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Like I said, you know, but, yeah, but California needs the rain. You know, last year in one day we got like 24 to 29 inches of snow in one storm. You know, that, do you realize if you guys had that moisture, how much it would be good for the summer?
Yeah.
You know? I understand the element there, but, you know, needless to say.
Yeah, we'd have to run out and turn the water on the hills for the plants to get watered.
Exactly. And here we have Bulldog 56 that says they love Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Never been there.
You had a guy on your show one time, he lived in California, and he says, hey, it's snowing right now, and I never knew it snowed in California.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, it's snowing, we're getting snow. I said, what?
Well, I know it does in the mountains.
I guess that's where he was.
Yeah,
he was up in the mountains.
Yeah.
That's your guy from up north. He was up in the mountains. Excuse me. But,
sure?
Yeah. I'm going to go to another song, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right.
This one's called Bump My Hits by Mike P.
It's Mike P. and Stone Capone. It's that real hood music, man. And this is our single. You know they say bump it all, it's
turn it up. Back when the full clip shot 15 times.
Angel's Last Boat Roadhouse Party is going to be on March, I think it's March 13th. No, actually, I think it's March 11th. I'll confirm that, and I'll send you an email. But and then SFV is going to have their car show and bike show on June 10th in 2012 at the same place at the Veterans Hall up in Chatsworth.
Yeah, that's the SWAT meet.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm pretty. It's in March, Bill. I'm sorry. Let me see. Somebody sent me an email, I think, here. Yeah. Anyway, I'm waiting for Shadow was supposed to call in. I don't know if he's going to call in or not, but they were going to talk about some stuff with the Marine Corps down at MCRD. We're going to build them. They're building a bike. The government bought them the bike, and they're talking about, well, he was supposed to call and let us know what's going on. So, but there's a few things going on, and they want to take the bike when it's done back east and put it in a museum, either in Quantico or in Camp Lejeune, I think. But I can't confirm or deny that one. And then, I saw that J.C. Berdue is coming to Canada to do a show. It'll be Alberta in June. I think that's going to do, but... what else is going on, Pete?
Well, you know, it's winter time here, so there's not a lot of activity. You know, it's like Alaska almost.
Yeah, you just kind of hibernate.
Yeah, you hibernate. She knows how it is. She lives in Chicago,
yep.
So it's, you just hibernate and order pizza and eat and stay in and sleep, watch TV and get fat.
Yeah, well, I grew up there.
Where? Alaska?
No, here.
Oh, Chicago, yeah. I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna try to
Chi-Town in the house.
I'm gonna say it on the air because he's probably listening, but he's being a little bitch earlier, so I didn't call in with him. But I was gonna call in with Gino, but he was being bitchy to me, so I said the hell with you.
Yeah.
And I love him anyway, but you know he was I don't know, his old age is kicking in, so he was grouchy. I said, I don't want you on the radio show with me. You're gonna be like that.
Yeah.
I had him on Hank's show the other night, and he was only on for like 2 minutes. It's funny, Hank was playing some Pink Floyd during intermission, and we called in on a three-way call, Gino and I, and he was playing Hey You by Pink Floyd, and, you know, certain parts of the song echo. They're psychedelic, you know, Floyd, they're very psychedelic, and Gino's on hold, and he says, the song was echoing, he says, I think I get some feedback on my cell phone. I says, no, man, that's the way the song sounds. He goes, what do you mean? I said, it's Pink Floyd. I said, just stay on hold. They'll unmute us. I said, he's playing Pink Floyd. Who is Pink Floyd? You don't know who Pink Floyd is? You're 66 years old? Oh, yeah, Pink Floyd. Oh, yeah. I said, that's their music. It echoes. It makes strange sounds. That's Roger Waters. That's his style. He goes, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I said, don't hang up. You're not getting feedback. You're not having trouble with your phone. So we went on his show for a little while. And
yeah, I heard that. Thanks for the plug.
Oh, did I say, yeah. Oh, yeah, but yeah. I told him, I said, Gino and I are like Phil and Bill, you know. I said, they make a good show because they argue, you know. You know, one guy will say one thing and the other guy will disagree, and that's what makes a good show. And we do TV shows here, Gino and I. I'm his co-host, and he's the host, and we fight on TV. It's funny, you know, on local access television, he has two shows, and he has a lot of people that watch it. My mother even watches it, he'll say the sky is blue. I'll say the sky is blue. He'll say it's red, and
right.
That's basically how it goes. And I said to Hank, I said it's sort of like Phil and Bill when they have their show on Thursday nights. I said I'm Phil and Gino's Bill, you know. I said, but that makes for a good show. You don't want people agreeing on everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to have a little bit of, you got to have critics, and you got to have people that disagree with you. You're going to have a boring show.
Exactly.
No?
Exactly.
We get there. You know, there's, you know, like tonight's one of them. I mean, there's things that I'll agree on, but other things I just find it redundant. I'll never understand it.
Yeah.
I just disagree with certain tactics, you know, and how it's done.
Well, you're going to learn from the best because Phil is big into that
stuff.
Is it
Phil or Phil?
Phil and Bill are both into biker rights.
I know.
And probably more than anybody I know, you know,
right.
And Hank, Phil, Bill is probably the three most people I know that are into biker rights and knowing right, you know, knowing people's rights and knowing this and knowing that. I know a lot
of
biker.
Did you know that I'm the West Coast representative for Bikers Against Discrimination?
There you go. There you go. He's the West Coast representative for that. So
right.
He knows his stuff. So if you're going to be his co-host, you're going to learn a lot from the guy, you know.
Oh.
You might not agree with it. You know,
no,
you might not
I do.
Agree with a lot of it, but that's what's going to make for a good show. And that's
right.
What makes for a
like
good show.
Like I said, I do respect it. I understand it. You know, some of it I won't, you know, which is obvious. That's, you know, a lot of people. But in regards to things that we go into and talking on the show here, like I said, tonight was just one to hit a head on the nail. In regards to how the FBI can, how they are going to look at us. That's not right.
Well,
that's why
they're the FBI, you know.
Yeah. And I'll never agree with that.
That to me always stands. Like somebody asked me what my little nephew, he's like, what's FBI stand for, Uncle Pete? I says, fucking ball-busting idiots.
Oh, no.
No, I see.
You know, for a man's point of view, this is how a man could look at what's the definition of FBI. It could be a female body inspector.
Yeah, that too. There's a T-shirt
yeah.
I used to have that said that.
I know. It used to be out
back
there.
Back in the 80s.
Yeah. Like I said, oh, God, that just made us all old. No, just kidding.
Yeah. But, you know, and then since I've been playing Mike's music, today, and he's got his second CD came out, and I'm going to have some here to give away next week or so, but...
Let me know. I didn't know that he had another. I knew that he had one out. I didn't know it was out yet.
Well, like, people are going to get it for right now.
What?
Select few people are going to get it for right now. There's
right.
It's going to be coming out, I understand, so we'll go from there when I get it. But
yeah.
I'll let you know when I get it. And whoever either calls in or first or sends me an email first or whatever, they'll get the copies.
Right.
Kind of like the same thing we did with Frank last week. If you send me an email or called in, you got a copy of the music.
Right.
So I think that's the first.
His music is amazing. You know.
Yeah, that's the fairest way to do it.
Right.
So.
That's agreeable. Yeah. And
yeah.
It's doable.
Yeah. So, there's a, he just came up with, well, I'll play one of them, but this is one of the new ones. It's called My Time. And I'll load it up.
Hey, guys, I got to log out early because I got to feed my dogs and I got to, check on my mother and stuff, but Phil, I'll be on Thursday night. Nora, it's nice talking to you again.
Same here.
Okay,
I'll give you a call before a Thursday show.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sometimes I miss your calls because my ring is not on, but I'll make sure
no,
my ring is on this week.
Just let Paul know I said hi.
Yeah, he's always asking for you. Phil,
okay.
Thanks for having me on. Your listeners, love and respect to everybody, and I'll see you Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Take care. Bye.
So, yeah, I mean... There's a lot of shit going on, and when do we draw a line in the sand? I've already drew my line in the sand. I mean, I've already been threatened that they're looking to get me for anything. So,
you know, and see, I'm sorry, I can't agree or accept that. I just can't. I'm not dumb or naive.
Yeah.
I just don't accept that kind of attitude. You
yeah.
know, because I just, like I said, I'm just at a loss for it. I'm never gonna get it. Never.
Yeah.
You know, and I can honestly say that.
Yeah.
I find it ridiculous because, you know, in some states, okay, where you're at. Okay, look
yeah.
at the heat that comes down when you guys ride. Versus
mm-hmm.
here. you know, they can do. They can pop it 80 mile coming past my home. And nobody does anything. We don't complain about it. We're just so used to it. It's like if a commuter train was going past at 5 o'clock every day. You know what
right.
I mean? It's not
yeah,
that
I used
to
have the L.
To.
I lived downtown, and I used to have the L right outside my window.
Right.
I could reach out and touch the tracks. I didn't complain when the train went by. I actually
exactly.
slept better. I slept better because of the noise.
Well, that's me, because I've always been around the commuter trains all throughout living in the state. So, you know, I'm as close to, I want to say probably a block and a half to the train, okay? But it's close enough to where, yeah, you hear it. You can't be on your cell phone in the backyard during the summer. You know, you got, hold on a minute, train's coming, you know, but... And people, how do you deal with that? I'm so used to it, it's normal. That's all I know, is the train noise. It's funny.
No, and basically, stay there if I lose you, because I'm getting this frequently messaged thing, so I might have to sign out and call back in. They're
okay.
playing games. Yeah, they're playing games with this again, but it's coming up. Oh, hang on.
Okay.
Because I got another caller. I went to get them, and they came up with this thing that pops up and says they sent me to the learning center.
Right.
They're playing games. Yeah, they're playing games with the server again. But let me get this. Hello, Shadow.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good, man. Yeah, I almost lost you because they sent me this thing, and it keeps saying our priority service call center is experiencing technical issues. Yeah, they're fucking with the shit.
Yeah, we're having a hard time getting online tonight with you. So they're goofing with you again, my friend.
I know. Yeah, pretty sad.
All right.
Pretty sad if I got them worried about me.
Can't stop the two of you.
No.
Anyways, I wanted to throw out a big shout for everybody down there in San Diego. It's kind of changing the subject a little bit. But down there in San Diego in Julian... The American Legion held a breakfast on Sunday, and man, what a breakfast it was. And it was for the Wounded Warrior Foundation.
Uh-huh.
I mean for the Warrior Foundation, not the Wounded Warrior, the Warrior Foundation, or the wounded guys down there in San Diego. And a great breakfast. We had a ton of people down there. Helping and cooking, and man, I couldn't believe it. But I just the community and all the bikers that showed up down there, what a bunch of support that was. It was really cool. And also, I got some new news also about that. The Warrior Foundation, as you know, and we've talked about this on the air before, is building a bike from scratch and putting it together. And we hear that bike might possibly be going to the museum in Quantico.
Right.
So
I was waiting for you to call in, and I just threw a couple of tidbits out there, but you're letting everybody know the real story. So go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's the story that we have so far. We're excited about it. They want to ride the bike back to the wall. And it's so exciting. We're just, you know, part of that money this weekend is going to go for the bike to finish the build. And I tell you, it's pretty exciting. And the support out there is unbelievable.
Did you drop off that parts list that Bill's?
No, we're going to do that Thursday. I have to be down there at MCRD. Thursday at 3 o'clock, and we were going to stop by Bill's prior to going down there so he can take a look at that.
I'm trying to get over to North Island so I can stop there on the way back.
Right. I understand that. So I look forward to you just stopping by. I know they're excited to meet you as well down there, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
So
well,
Dan wanted
we need
to
get
say
some,
hi.
We need to get some of them guys to call in, too.
Taco Tuesday, it's kind of hard to get in early.
Yeah. Well, maybe Thursday night, too.
Yeah, well, definitely.
You know, and then once you guys start building the stuff, we can either do a live show Tuesday or Thursday down there.
Oh, that would be pretty exciting if we can get away with that. That would be something.
I think we could.
Well, I'm excited that you guys want to be involved in both of you, and that's just, you know, it's exciting for us. We just have a lot of obstacles to overcome, but we're going to do that along the way. And once we get this bike done, these guys are excited to do it. We met with them down there on base last week, which you're aware of. And,
yeah.
You know, to find out how many people how many of these warriors wanted to actually work on the bike. And now we're all going to meet on Thursday to start working on it, do inventory, and move forward with it. So,
how many guys?
We're looking at hopefully 10 guys.
Cool.
To work on it. They're gonna. The first thing that they're going to do this week is that we're going to sit down and discuss where we're at with the bike, and we're going to do a full inventory next week, and then come back with us with a theme that they're going to want to do the bike. So
who's going to paint the tin?
They all have different ideas, but we want them to put
together
some sort of...
Have you got a painter for the tin yet?
So when they put this together, we have some direction, so it's not just a... throwing it together on a raw bike, as you can imagine.
Right, but have you got a painter yet?
No, we don't have a painter yet lined up. We don't have a powder coater lined up yet.
Okay, I'll see what I can do for that.
Well, you know what, a lot of it is with whatever the guys want to do, and it's kind of changed since the first time they went up to Big Bear Choppers to initiate this project with the kit, and what some of the guys have gone out now. So we have some new guys in that are the Wounded Warriors that are going to be doing the project. So there's a whole new set of ideas and themes be happening.
So in other words, everybody's going to get on the same page and which way they want to go, basically.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And then once we find out, then I can approach the powder coater I know and the painter.
Exactly. And that's we're just waiting because this is the Injured Warriors project. It's not ours. It's not...
Right.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest with you, at this time, I don't know, and I don't believe they have a paint facility on base. But then again, you know, who's painting all these vehicles down there? So... Maybe, in fact, they do. As for a powder coater, we definitely need a powder coater on board.
Yeah,
with
they have a paint booth down there.
They do?
Yes, they do. Every hobby shop has a paint booth.
Okay, well, when I was down there where the bike's located or the kit's located, I didn't see a paint booth down there, but there again, it could be somewhere else in another building. And you're more aware of that. You're down there every day, so you're more aware of what's what, and that's one of the reasons I'm excited you're coming down there, because you know what's available to us as well.
Yeah, and and if we need to do any welding, we can get that done too. I just happen to know a couple of welders.
yeah, that's for sure. We need some welding done. Matter of fact, Diane needs some welding done on her bike. You need to come up and help me with that. For sure.
Okay. We can do that.
Yeah, are you there alone tonight?
Yeah, Bill's with his mom on Tuesdays.
Okay.
He's taking care of a honeydew.
How's his wife doing?
She's holding her own.
Okay, cool.
She's been back and forth with the doctor the last couple of weeks with her, but she's going like every other day now, pretty much.
And then have you put a shout out for everyone to know, all the bikers out there to know about the run? The prison run in Arizona on this coming Sunday.
It's this Sunday. That's the Florence prison run. I'm sorry.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big run out there. I'm not going to make that, but I know a lot of people are heading out that way, so that should be a great run for everybody.
Uh-huh.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
listen, you have a great night. I just wanted to call in and say thank you to the biker community out there for showing up and showing their support to the Warrior Foundation at the breakfast on Sunday. It was cold, so it took a lot of balls to get out of bed and get on that bike and ride out there in that cold weather.
Yeah, but once you get in the wind, you're okay.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
No matter
it was
how
great cool. I just got
an instant message. There's a guy in the chat room. His name is Billy Halsey. He's a wounded Marine. He's doing his time out here at base at the Wounded Warrior facility. And he also happens to dabble in building bikes and stuff. So I sent him a message to call in. Hopefully he can do that.
Hopefully he can do that. And hopefully on Thursday at 3 o'clock he can be down there and meet up with us and help us.
Well, he's going to call in right now, so let me get him. Don't hang up right away. Let's wait for him to call, and we can all talk to him together.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, this is the gentleman I told about. I told about the knife situation, and when he got pulled over downtown a week and a half ago, the cop walked up to him and told him he wanted to look at the knife. So he took it out. He gave it to him, but as he was holding on to it, the cop put his hand to it. He asked him for a receipt. The guy gave it back to him and told him to not come downtown with a knife anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I told everybody what to do. If anything they take from you, ask for a receipt. I handed a guy my driver's license the other day, and I asked him for a receipt, and he got pissed off. He was taking
Did you really?
Yeah, he was taking it.
That's funny. Give me a receipt before you walk away. That's funny.
Yeah.
You know what? That's bullshit. They can't take knife from you, you know? Not unless you're using it in a threatening manner.
Yeah, they did it to Bill. They did it to Bill, and Bill got an attorney and stuff, and it took them 3.5 weeks to get the knife back because they couldn't find it.
Yeah, well, that's typical. I'll tell you what. You know what? It's becoming worse and worse out there, and we just need to keep fighting the battle because it is a battle out there.
Yeah, like we were talking about a little earlier, is if we all came together, we'd be a force to be reckoned with.
Well, sure. You know, I saw the other day, and it was kind of interesting. Someone posted up on Facebook or somewhere, Sonny for president. And I thought, you know, in the back of my mind, I said, you know what? He's president of what he does. What the hell? But,
yeah.
You know, it just cracks me up, this whole thing. You know,
yeah.
It just got, Diane's sitting here looking at me like I'm crazy. But
yeah,
I am crazy.
Yeah, well, we're all a little crazy. But I got Billy. Billy's unmuted right now. Billy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, Billy, this is Shadow. Shadow, this is Billy. And Diane,
how
this
you doing?
Is Billy. This
hey,
Diane.
Billy, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I hear you're down there in the Wounded Warrior.
Yeah, I just got in the Wounded Warrior about, a week ago. I just checked in over there here on Pendleton. I just started the program with these guys.
Are you over there at the Naval Hospital?
I'm at the Wounded Warrior Battalion over here by the Naval Hospital on Camp Pendleton.
Okay. Are you going to be able to come over on Thursday afternoon about 3 o'clock?
Oh, most
over there to the MCRD?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's
okay.
It's at MCRD, Billy, at the hobby shop on MCRD. When you go in the gate, you got to go left. I think you got to go left, and then you got to make a right, and it's right there.
Okay, are you going down there?
I'll be at work, but I got something on North Island. I'm gonna schedule for the afternoon instead of the morning, so I can stop there on the way back.
All right.
I'm gonna be I'm gonna be there at about 2:15, 2:30, and I know the guys are going to come over at 3 o'clock, and we're going to have a meeting and go over this bike and proceed forward with it. And boy, I'd be honored if you came out there and joined us with this.
Oh, definitely. I'm willing to help, you know. That's what I love doing, especially helping people out, you know.
Well, it's
my fellow brothers, you know. It's a big deal.
Right. Well, that's cool. And this build is for you guys. I mean, this bike is, the Warriors out there are going to pick the theme for the bike. They're going to decide which way and how this thing is going to be built. We're just going to help, basically.
All right.
And from my understanding, you've already worked on bikes and you know about bikes. So that's going to be a great help.
Yeah, definitely. I'm willing to help whatever you need. You know, I do fabrication and all that stuff, so.
Well, great. Great. If you can get there a little bit early so we can meet and talk about it as well. And
okay.
We can go from there. What time do you get off of work?
Usually I have I check in the morning. I think I might have an appointment in the morning, but I could be there by like 2:15. No problem.
Okay. Perfect. I
can't miss him. He'll be in a big Chevy truck, and he's about a foot taller than me.
Who is?
He is. He'll be in a big Chevy truck, and you can't miss him. He's about a foot taller than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I stick out like a sore thumb.
Everybody's a foot taller than you, buddy.
Okay, just like Rusty, put the little guy in the middle, huh?
That's why you're always in the middle of the photos.
I know. But that means I'm loved.
Yeah.
You are loved.
You know that, my friend. You are loved more than you know out here in the community.
Billy,
that's for sure.
Hey, Shadow, while you're on the phone, Billy, tell him what happened when you went downtown.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. I left one of the bars down there. I stopped to get a pack and talk to one of the guys that worked down there. I was on my bike, and I pull out of there, and I get maybe one block down. I think it's one of the Sport Fisher, whatever the road's called, and cop comes flying in behind me, pulls me over. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, yep, here we go, or you know what's going to happen. You know, they're going to haggle me. And cop walks up, he goes, no, I pulled you over. Not at all. He goes, well, what's that on your side? I said, well, it's a knife. He's like, well, it's concealed. I was like, well, not really. It's sticking out. You can see the sheath and everything. And he goes, well, I'm confiscating it. I said, all right. I pulled out the sheath, and I had this knife since I was a kid. And I was, you know what? And I remember what Phil told me, ask for a receipt for your property. So I go, you know, before I give you my knife, I want a receipt for my property. And he looks me dead in my eyes, and he goes, don't let me catch you in Oceanside with that knife again. Storms off to his car, gets in his car, and drives right away.
You should have told him to kiss your ass.
No, I wanted to. I mean, I don't like getting my bike impounded, so I didn't.
It's easier to do it my way, because that frustrated, like he said, he got pissed off and he left, because it frustrates them, because they know you know. As soon as you say that, that lets them know that you know what the fuck you're talking about, and they're going to win. They're not going to win.
Yeah, and then I was down there last night. I was out with a friend, and me and her were walking up the street to the next bar, and they had the whole little crew out there harassing everybody. And the same guy that pulled me over was right there, and he just sat there and he stared at me. And I walked into the other bar up the top of the hill, and they sat there and they followed everybody up there, sat outside, talked to some people, and then they just sat across the street waiting for whatever was going on.
Yeah. Well, it's just like when I come down there, there's nobody there, and I'm there not even 5 minutes, and there's three or four cars parked across the street waiting to see what I'm going to do.
Oh, it looks like we were there last night because they were all out.
Yeah.
Sure they don't have a GPS
somewhere
on your bike, man?
What's that?
With me?
Sure, yeah, no.
No,
they don't have a tracking device on your bike.
It's very rare that I ride around with my phone on. I take the battery out.
Yeah. I hear you there.
And you know where I go, I take the battery out.
I got stopped at a checkpoint coming back, and they pulled me up, and they said, you've been drinking? I go, no. And they go, where you been? And I go, really? Is that what this is about? And sure enough, man, they pulled me over. They kept me there for over an hour.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to be kidding me, man. I mean,
yeah.
And it's like, what? You know, they got nothing else better to do but to mess with guys on bikes, you know?
Yeah, well,
about a month ago,
they pulled me over and wanted to know take off my jacket. They wanted to see my tattoos. I told the guy, nah, I don't have it. Nah, well, I got a tattoo, but it's in an inconspicuous place.
He goes, all right, I'll bite. Where is it? I go, it's a tattoo. It's a picture of a $100 bill on my penis. And he says, what? And I said, it's a picture of a $100 on my penis because I like to play with my money and watch it grow.
That's funny. Oh, yeah, they,
that went over
they
real
definitely
good,
like the pictures of the tattoos and stuff like that. And it's like, I won't take off my clothes. Let them do it. It's like, no, I'm not doing it. You know, next thing you know, they want to take you downtown. But
I always tell them, they always tell me they're going to charge me under 180, Penal Code 148 for obstruction. And when they mention that, I just stick my hands out and say, let's go. I got nothing to do. Because it takes about 8 hours to do all that shit. Because as soon as they do it and they arrest you, you have the right to see it. You have the right to go in front of the judge at that point.
Well, don't it right away, or isn't it 24 hours?
No, right away. Most people don't know that.
Speedy trial.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
That's cool. I have to remember that. Yeah, because I don't like that. Well, it's like they make you take off your helmet. If you have a breakaway, they still want you to take off your helmet so they can look inside your helmet, see if you have anything in there. And it's like, it's a piece of clothing. I'm not taking that off. They don't like that either.
You don't
That's
have
a good
to.
Idea, like you're saying. Ask for a receipt. If you take
absolutely,
say I need a receipt before I take it off. I don't know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a
same thing.
Knife.
With, like when they tell me to take off my helmet, they want to see my face. So when I open the front, he goes, "What are you being a smartass for?" I said, "You said you wanted to see my face."
That's funny.
Because you already know if they took that knife. You already know he was going to do it. He was going to throw it in his car and take it home and put it in his collection with the rest of the shit he confiscates.
Right.
Exactly. They did that to Bill. He ended up going to the CHP and filing a theft complaint. And when he did it, they asked him straight out, are you sure you want to do this? He said, yeah, I want my knife back. So 3.5 weeks later, they called him up and told him they found it.
Yeah, they found it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I said, you never take off. You never take off your helmet, man.
Nope.
Never. You gotta get a
especially
warning.
Especially an outlaw helmet. What were you gonna say, Diane?
Hey, there's no such thing as outlaw helmet, man.
What were you gonna say?
You can see me in the front seat of a cop car in Spearfish with my helmet on.
Diane, this is a true story. We're coming back from, we're up there in Sturgis, right? Last year?
Yeah.
Or 2 years ago. And we're riding back through the backcountry and that, having a good old time. And
Spearfish Canyon.
And we're coming out, and there's two people in front of us. I'm in the back, and Diane's in front of me. And we go around a corner, and we see this unit hiding in the bushes. Well, they come out, and they come up behind me, and I'm going, crap, this is all I need, right? They go around me and get behind Diane and pull her over, right? And so I pull up in front of her about 100 feet and sit there, and they're harassing her. And then she wouldn't take off her helmet, so they make her get in the cop car and sitting there. And so I'm sitting up there taking a picture of them while they're harassing her, and she's still sitting in there with her damn helmet on. So, yeah, she knows that lesson. Don't take nothing off. So, anyways, so you can see that on. We'll post that online tomorrow.
Okay.
No, we won't.
Yeah, I will. It's funny. But anyway.
You know, Art just told me. You know, he says he has a dot sticker. You never take off your helmet, and he has a dot sticker on his. And I said, yeah, I have my dot stickers right underneath where it says "warning, insensitive prick."
You?
Yeah. Yes. I have the same thing on my hard hat at work.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so what I'm going to do, we're down to the last 6 minutes. What I'm going to do is I invite all you guys to call back Thursday, and we'll talk about everything in general again. And Thursday, I'm going to have a special show. I'm not going to say who it is, but I'm going to confirm. And if they don't have if they don't have something going on, I will have the caller here. And I don't know how long. He promised me 45 minutes, so we'll see what happens. But I'll see if I can get that arranged.
Oh, way cool. Way cool.
Yeah.
We'll be there. I look forward to seeing both of you down there on Thursday in the afternoon.
Okay.
Right.
I'll see you guys on Thursday.
All right, man. 876, you're on the air.
Hey, Phil?
Yeah.
Hey, Diane, wants to say something.
Just going to say, if you can give Billy our number.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I will.
Okay.
Yeah, give him my number and then have him call me as soon as he can tonight.
You want him to call you tonight?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Diane and I are signing out.
Yeah, I'm going to take us out with a Mike P song, and like I said, good night, everybody, and I'll talk to you guys Thursday.
All right, Phil, I'll talk to you.
All right, man. Good night, everybody.